projector and everything working now. I'm going to be speaking from this side of the room, so your front row seat didn't work so well, did it, Roger? Okay, even Roger can hear me. Are we successfully recording audio? Good. These slides are actually a longer version of this. Is on the web, and I can't remember the address, but if you email me, I can tell you. Now, how do you remember my email address? That's very easy. Remember, I was one of the very first people here to have email. My address is mc@uga.edu. So you only have to remember two initials. If you give my three initials, it will go to somebody else who gets annoyed by it, I think. I don't know exactly who that is, but welcome. I'm glad to see even people I have never seen before here. My topic is Christianity in a Postmodern Relativistic World. I've given this talk a couple of other times. I first gave it at church, as you might guess, and I am, as I said to them there, I am not doing a Bible study today. This is not a study of Christian doctrine. This is a mission field study. If you were going to be a missionary to India, you'd be studying Indian culture. If you were going to be a missionary to Papua New Guinea, you'd be studying their culture. Well, you are a missionary to educated America, which is a stranger place, perhaps, than either of those two, and it deserves some study as well. This is also not the most well-organized presentation I've ever given. Please bear with me, especially because I'm trying to do it in about 3/4 of its usual length. Zoom, zoom. I want to address two things. One of them is, why is there such widespread feeling that scientifically educated people shouldn't or can't believe in God, even though there's no scientific evidence against God? What is the source of this cultural expectation? And by the way, let me, as a footnote to that, say, why do so many people think Darwin is the opposite of God and that somehow Darwinian evolution disproves the gospel? Why do we have a statue that is Darwin on one side, and on the other side it is Michelangelo's face of God down in front of graduate studies? You've seen the statue. You probably don't know what it is. If viewed from the front, it is an old man with a strange eye disorder. Okay, do people really think we only believe in God because we can't think of any other way for biological species to diversify? No, I think it's a cultural prejudice. You're supposed to buy a package, and there's no room for God in that package if you belong to a particular one of the three cultures I'm going to describe. The other thing I want to address is, why is it so widely felt that you have no right to impose your beliefs on anyone else, and that you should be tolerant of absolutely everything? There are serious logical problems with both of these postmodernist doctrines, which I'm going to get to. But my quick answer is, the modern educated world has three rival intellectual cultures. You may think you're dealing with one culture. No, there are three. And educated people are often caught between two or all three of them without clearly understanding the difference. The three cultures that I want to distinguish, and the nomenclature here is mostly widely recognized, but a little bit of it is my own, I'm going to call pre-modern, modernist, and post-modern culture. Pre-modern culture focuses on authority and tradition, and its goal is to preserve the wisdom of the past. C.S. Lewis used to parade himself as a living specimen of this, although he actually knew quite a bit about the other two as well and could get around in them. Modernist culture aims to be scientific and reject the superstitions of the past, reject the mistaken, false, mythical beliefs of the past now that we have science and we have everything figured out. Postmodern culture, which has really become more prominent since the 1970s, is based on opinions and tastes, not facts. Deep down, postmodernists believe there is no objective truth. So it's a matter of what works for you. Technical note, modernism is also the name of a kind of liberal theology, and that is not what I mean by that word here. So if you've heard liberal Protestant theology denounced as modernism, it's related, but not, it is not the thing I am calling modernism in this talk. Where did the three cultures come from? They have historical roots. Pre-modern culture is, of course, as its name suggests, very old, and one of its cultural sources was nostalgia and fear during the fall of the Roman Empire. Remember that in Europe, for something like 500 years or more after the fall of Rome, our ancestors lived in a culture where the past was definitely better than the present and the present better than the future. Decline was going on. Pre-modern culture looks to the past for guidance, for beauty, for treasure. Modernist culture has its roots largely in the French Enlightenment and the subsequent rise of science, 1850 to 1950 roughly, the triumph of the scientific method over everything else. And postmodernist culture, I'm not simply going to attack postmodernism and beat it to a pulp the way many of you may wish. Postmodernism had its origin partly in a very healthy reaction against the arrogance of modernism and an increased awareness of human fallibility. There were signs of it right after World War II, and it became a major force in academic culture, I think, in the 1970s. It was one of the weird things about the 70s. It hadn't been weird prior to that. If you lived through the 70s, as I did, you know that it was an odd period when it was fashionable to be confused. How do the three cultures handle various things? How do you look at morality? Well, if you're a pre-modernist, you're going to view morality as something objective, and you're going to be looking either to the Bible or to things like Aristotle's ethics. Pre-modernists need not be Christians, I hasten to add. Some of them are Greco-Roman Stoic-type atheists. But you look somehow to derive morality from something logical. The modernist wants to replace morality with scientific knowledge. We will actually study human society. We'll determine whether there are scientific objections to premarital sex. If you lived through the 70s, you probably heard people talk that way as well. If you didn't, just as well. Postmodernists say you get to choose your own values. It's all relative. Whatever works for you. You have no right to criticize the values that other people have chosen for themselves. How do the three cultures look at religion? Well, pre-modern culture, if not actually religious, respects religion. It's the search for the truth about God backed up by authoritative tradition. The modernist tends to feel that religion is obsolete, replaced by science, although modernists often respect the church as a kind of social institution that does good works and will gradually fade away as people become more enlightened. So modernists are not necessarily hostile to Christianity. They just look at us and smile and say, well, in 500 more years, they won't have that anymore. Postmodernists say, unlike the postmodernist is not going to say the religious people are wrong. The postmodernist is going to say you have a right to believe in any religion you want if it works for you. Just don't impose it on me. Don't impose it on anybody that doesn't want to participate in it. How do we look at art, architecture, and music? This is perhaps where you see the clearest contrast between the three cultures. I think Francis Schaeffer would have loved this slide. He passed away just when we were starting to begin to be able to understand this part. And so I'm, in the sense, continuing his approach to cultural apologetics here. The pre-modern approach, and I am married to a pre-modern artist, the pre-modern approach is to convey beauty to the audience. That's what the arts are for, and they need not be original. In fact, a pre-modern artist will say, don't even try to be original, just try to be good, and you'll find that you're being more original than you ever imagined, just from trying to be good. Now, the modernist, and modernism perhaps popped into the arts in the early 20th century, it's really important to be original, even if nobody likes it. People will eventually come around. Everybody gets despised by the critics at first, right? Just splatter paint on canvas the way Jackson Pollock did and tell them that it's art, and eventually they'll see that it is. The postmodernist rejects the stupidity of modern art and says it's okay to do traditional as well as innovative things, and if really nobody likes something, it's probably not art, despite what the modernists say. The best thing about postmodernism, I think, is its rejection of the wildest and weirdest claims of the modernists in the arts. How about the study of literature? Well, to the pre-modernist, we judge things in the light of classical traditions, the best that has gone before. The modernist wants to make the study of literature more scientific, bring in psychology, anthropology, and so forth, study how literature affects people. And the postmodernist has an approach to the study of literature that I don't entirely understand, but it includes taking each text on its own independent of everything else. And it usually at this point they start speaking French. pardon me, I don't mean to be poking quite as much fun at them as I sound like. Some, yes, not quite as much. How do the three cultures view knowledge as a whole? Well, to the pre-modernist, human knowledge is a growing body of knowledge, much of it ancient, and then we add little things to what was known in the past. Some things were known in the past, more is known now, more will be known in the future. The modernist is concerned with throwing out the false beliefs of the past. A modernist presupposition is people in the pre-scientific era were stupid and got everything wrong. Nobody really got anything right until maybe Sir Isaac Newton or whoever you count it as beginning with. Okay, C.S. Lewis called this chronological snobbery. The assumption that our era has brains, previous eras didn't. Postmodernism tends to divide knowledge into compartments that don't interact. Keep separate subjects separate from each other, and tolerate contradiction, not try to make everything consistent. What are the characteristic mistakes or fallacies? All three cultures have mistakes and foolish people, and people who get things wrong. The characteristic mistake of the pre-modernist is to believe whatever the ancients say, unquestioningly. That's the characteristic pre-modernist mistake. The characteristic modernist mistake is to think that now we know it all and everybody in earlier times was foolish or ignorant. And the characteristic postmodernist mistake is to believe that it is somehow unfair if you ever say anything is objectively better than anything else. That's the characteristic postmodernist mistake. Okay, three cultures. I should now be telling you which one is right, right? That's sort of like asking what color to paint the walls is right, or something like that. Because it's tempting to say Christians should just be pre-modernists. A lot of Christians approach it this way. I don't think it will do. You're simply refusing to step into a large part of your mission field if you do that. And you're also making some mistakes. It's said that a conservative is one who prefers the sins of the past to those of the future, or something like that. I'm not that kind of conservative, I hope. On many points, premodernism does come out looking better because there's been more time for mistakes to be weeded out. The kinds of premodernism that are obviously wrong simply aren't around anymore. But premodernism isn't perfect. One of its limitations, one of the reasons I don't want you to be an unquestioning premodernist, is there's a tendency to ignore modern discoveries. I've had conversations with people who can't understand why smoking is definitely wrong now when it wasn't or wasn't known to be 100 years ago. The fact is we've found out some things. We've also vindicated a few people who called this one right a long time ago, like King James of England, and were ridiculed in their own time for not having adequate evidence. A second point I want to make is that all truth is God's truth. You can't just switch off your interest in and awareness of modern scientific discoveries and live in a pre-modern mindset. All real knowledge glorifies God, even if we haven't had it very long. By the way, I have a personal motto. That motto is, truth does not conflict with truth. It's expressed really oddly in Latin. I'm not sure I can quote the original Latin right now. St. Thomas Aquinas, Summa Contra Gentiles, somewhere in the early chapters, is where I got that from. But basically, truth does not conflict with truth, and we should not be afraid of scientific progress. A third reason not to retreat into premodernism is that it would make us unable to communicate with the modern world. And a fourth reason not to retreat into premodernism is premodernists often have a false memory of a past golden age. What I said about the sins of the past rather than the future. Was everybody in America really a better Christian 50 years ago? Back when racism was okay? Back when all sorts of strange limits on personal freedom were expected? Or are we just remembering the people and the aspects of the culture that were good at the time and forgetting what was bad at the time? And some premodernists want to use Christianity to justify anything old-fashioned that they like. You have probably run into people whose real interest is reactionary politics and who think that because they are a political reactionary, they are a Christian. A bah humbug attitude toward anything. It comes as a shock to some people to learn that neither Rush Limbaugh nor Glenn Beck is a Christian. But it's true. Nonetheless, we often find ourselves needing to defend the things that premoderns get right against modern and postmodern prejudices. So, what do we say to modernists? What is the trouble with modernism? Well, first, it's great arrogance. It is by far the most arrogant of the three. It's people with a scientific mindset who are sure that everybody else is wrong about everything, all so often. Second, chronological snobbery, I already named, thinking that people in the past didn't have brains, often rewriting history to make people in the past look stupid. And the third, why do scientific people not believe in God? I think it's because there's no place for God in this package. What passes for atheism is really, in many cases, just narrow specialization, and for them, God is like what rugby is for me, something I simply have no interest in and see no reason that I should have an interest in it. Is there a good reason I need to be interested in rugby? I don't know. Okay, lacrosse then. I hear there's a sport by that name. I have a vague idea what it looks like, and that's all I know. They play it at Harvard. I went to Yale. Okay, so it's a strange pagan practice from a couple of states up the coast, as far as I can tell. Anyhow, the point is, scientific atheism is often really just a presupposition, having a system with no place for God in it. Here's an example of modernist propaganda that you've probably heard. You've probably heard maybe even were told in elementary school, that Christopher Columbus was opposed by people who thought that the earth was flat. How many of you have heard that? Well, in fact, the fact that the earth was round had been known to educated people for thousands of years by then, something like 2,000 years. The diameter was known fairly accurately, and Columbus's critics realized Columbus had the diameter wrong. His ship was not going to be well-stocked enough to actually go as far as India might be if you're going the long way. And furthermore, taking a sailing ship into an unknown climate is perilous. What if you go somewhere where there's no wind? Then you're sort of stuck, aren't you? Okay, those are not stupid mythical... These are not stupid people believing myths and superstitions. Those are eminently rational arguments, and in fact, he could not have made it to India. But fortunately, there was something in the way called America, and he had a good outcome after all. I have debunked a number of quotes and stories along these lines, where history has actually been taught inaccurately by modernists who want to falsify things to make premodernists look foolish. Why aren't scientists supposed to believe in God? Well, by mistake, I talked about this already two slides back. This will save us some time. It's simply that God doesn't fit in the modernist cultural system. Now, that was modernism. Modernism may grate on us, but modernism does not puzzle us. It is nice and clear. Postmodernism is not. Any real postmodernist is probably going to say that I'm misdefining postmodernism. I think postmodernism is the philosophical system all of whose adherents believe everyone else is misdefining it. At least a small sample confirms that characterization. But first, some things are right about postmodernism and ought to be welcomed. Number one, it knocks down the arrogance of modernism. Second, it admits that we don't know everything. At last, there's some humility here. The first two all too often lacked any humility. And the third, the thing I really like about the postmodernists is they reject what is bad about modern art. Now, they have their own style, which is a mixture of all previous styles, and you can see it in the Athens Holiday Inn as you drive up Broad Street. That is postmodern architecture. But it's also postmodernism that made us stop building things like the Park Hall Annex, the little shoebox-like thing on the end of an elegant building, and build instead things like the Miller Learning Center. Or for that matter, this building, which tries to harmonize very conflicting architectural styles that are around it. So I like what postmodernism has done to the arts. What's wrong with postmodernism? The absence of objective facts and values. Too much fallibility, in other words. By the way, I really am in the waning minutes of this talk now. What time am I supposed to finish and let everybody go?
Sometime between 1:05 and 1:10, and then just leave some time for a Q&A after that.
Okay, you can edit this out of the recording, right? If you hear this, you're hearing an unedited recording. Okay, in the 1970s, many students were taught a new philosophical discovery of the times called ethical relativism, the doctrine that there is no objective right or wrong. People and societies get to make up their own moral values. Ever heard that before? It was standard classroom stuff in the 70s. It's a handy thing to believe if you want to lower your own moral standards. Or maybe if your plans for Saturday night include lowering someone else's moral standards, which was very common in the 70s, and I suppose still is. But there are some problems with ethical relativism that are fairly easy to point out. First, there's a moral problem. Do we have to let tyrants be tyrants? Do we have to let Nazis be Nazis? Do we have to say that if a whole society chooses to do something disgusting, it's their right? If you are a real ethical relativist, you can't object to other people doing what they agree to do in their own culture, no matter what it is. And there's a logical problem. Ravi Zacharias rings the changes on this with very amusing results, but so I'll only mention it for a moment. Is it objectively wrong to say that anything is objectively wrong? I feel I should imitate Ravi Zacharias here and say, are you saying there are no absolutes? Yes. Is that absolutely true? Yes. Do you see a problem here? Okay, there are many variations on this paradox. You see where it leads, so I'm not going to stick with it very long, but move on. There is a third objection to ethical relativism, a practical one. Will you still be an ethical relativist if I steal your wallet? Or will you suddenly have the insight that what I have done is objectively wrong? If you're a real ethical relativist, all you can say is, I'll fight you for it. Maybe with the help of the police or some other people you can get to agree with you, who probably are not ethical relativists. Well, today's postmodernism goes beyond ethical relativism because now not only claims of morality, but also claims of fact are relative. No matter what you say, people can reply, you say that because of your culture. Does anyone remember C.S. Lewis's story about Bulverism? Okay, one day, Mrs. Bulver remarked that the angles of a triangle always add up to 180 degrees, and Mr. Bulver retorted, you say that because you are a woman. That's the fallacy of Bulverism. You say that because you are a fill-in-the-blank. A key postmodernist insight is that everybody has a point of view. Nobody's mind is a blank slate. There is no neutral vantage point from which to survey facts. Everybody has preconceptions. Everybody has expectations. To which I say, true enough, this is one of the great insights of postmodernism. But let's remember, objective facts can overcome your preconceptions. That's why we call them objective facts. As a scientist, I go into the laboratory hoping to fight with the facts and lose. Okay, I want to run into things that will overcome my preconceptions. Relativism is often couched in terms of an absolute demand for tolerance. Now, there are two reasons you might be in favor of tolerance. I am in favor of tolerating dissenting opinions, but my reason for it is the first one. The truth is out there, and we want people to be able to discover it by debating it. That's what a pre-modernist or a modernist would say on the issue of tolerating dissent and discussion. The postmodernist reason for demanding tolerance is very different. It is that there is no objective truth, so nobody's opinion is objectively false. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong. Consider, however, what this implies. If there is no objective truth, then to cut to the chase, there's no objective reason to be fair or tolerant. Okay, if there is no objective truth, then all debates are really just power struggles, which a lot of postmodernists believe. If all debates are merely power struggles, why do you want to tolerate, why should you, why must you tolerate people who want to fight against you? I mean, if there's no objective morality, there's no should or ought in there, is there? So why is relativism supposed to lead to tolerance? I think it actually leads to the opposite. It leads to people ganging up on other people. You have no right to impose your values on me, they say, while I'm imposing mine on you. And they never give the last half of that. The notion that all value systems are equally good is believed by only a tiny fraction of the Earth's population. Why should this tiny fraction be the one group that got it right? Okay, this is related to the claim that all religions are equally good. Isn't it striking that not one of them claims that for itself? Not one. Now, if I can have about one more minute, how has postmodernism influenced modern evangelical Christianity? Well, A good influence is more interest in the practice and experience of Christianity, not just doctrine. If you have modernist inclinations, you spend all your time polishing up your systematic theology rather than living it out. You're just collecting knowledge. But this can go too far. Now, a bad thing that comes from postmodernist influence is excessively seeker-friendly churches that cater to human tastes of any of a variety of kinds rather than the glory of God and the accumulated wisdom of Christendom. And another bit of postmodernist influence, one of the oldest actually, dating from the World War II era, is what I call Bible in a bubble, or Christianity in a bubble. You get this from people, perhaps the neo-Orthodox theological movement, Karl Barth and others, exemplify this to a degree. The idea that we should just disconnect our faith from the world around it and understand it in its own terms. The idea that something has to be understood in its own terms, disconnected from everything around it, is a postmodernist idea. And this happened to enter Christian theology in the popular evangelical theology in the 1950s, just when it needed not to. Just when we needed to be dealing with so many developments in the modern world. So you may be influenced by postmodernism if you simply tell the Bible story and ignore the culture to which you are speaking. Okay, I'm running out of time, so quickly, how do we communicate with the postmodern world? Well, postmodernists will listen sympathetically, but will fail to grasp that we're talking about objective facts. When I say Jesus is the Savior, that is not on the level of I like broccoli or I don't like broccoli. We're not saying we like something. We're talking about something objectively true, and it's easy for a postmodern audience to miss that. When dealing with postmodern audiences, make sure we listen to them, not just the other way around. Make sure to get across that we appreciate what is good about postmodernism, especially the rejection of arrogant modernism. We're talking about objective facts, and here's a big one. Postmodern audiences will take it personally when you disagree with them, because to them, debates are power struggles. So I have to spend some time simply establishing the notion that I can disagree with you without hating you. Okay, that's exactly what I would say to any gay activist in the world. I don't hate you the least bit, but I think you're mistaken about some things. I don't agree with you about some things. And that is not personal rejection. We're not talking about you and me. We're talking about truth. We're talking about ideas, something outside of us. This is easily lost on a postmodern audience. And we have considered postmodern ways of thinking and have found them flawed. And we're not simply pre-modernists. That's really, really important to get across. Okay, it doesn't make sense to ask which of the three is true because they are styles or cultures, not, for the most part, sets of beliefs. Particular beliefs can be true or false, whichever package they arrive in. And there, I'm finally ready for questions. Thank you very much for your attention and patience. Yes, Mike.
The last one, postmodernists, do they really not even think anything about logic? Is it just like, is logic itself totally irrelevant? You can't relate anything to logic? Things that are just like, when they say you don't have a right to, and let's just stop right there. They're being hypocritical when they make that statement. But there's no logic there?
Well, I think they are more subtle and sophisticated than that. They certainly have logic. Bear in mind that logic is of limited use if you have incomplete knowledge to reason from. And the big thing that they are focused on is that our knowledge is incomplete. But it does cause the appearance of contradiction when you start hearing someone say, because there is no, it is objectively true that there is no objective truth, or something like that. I think that's a serious objection to claiming that there's no objective truth. Yes?
Michael, even postmodernists, though, I think in some areas of knowledge, So I don't think they totally, I mean, isn't it just certain areas of knowledge or certain questions that they would say there's no truth? Or are you going to say on any question they're going to say there's really no objective answer?
I think that on any question they would say there is no objective answer, but on some of them there is so much of a consensus that it seems like there is. Like the temperature outside. At least that's my understanding of it. I'm not really sure. Yes?
Thank you so much for all of this. And we deal with biolife scientists on campus all the time or across the nation or whatever. And I've heard many uplifting things by coming to these seminars. I hesitate to speak for Fritz, but right along, once upon a time I read or heard him say something about in his studies of science, he learned sometimes how God did it.
Exactly.
And so why are so many bio-life scientists not thinking that way with their valid science, and why do they extrapolate Darwinism past the origin of the cell itself and go all the way back to the origin of life and deny deity? You know, in the comment about Black briefly, you know, why deny the glorious obvious just because it's unexplainable? Romans 1.
Right, and I would say to such a person, well, supposing prebiotic evolution, chemical evolution works the way you say, where do you get the laws of chemistry and physics? Where do you get the planet on which this can happen? I think that a lot of these people are very much misinformed about what we believe. They hear from the Bible-thumping young earthers who have it all figured out and are going around with some kind of strange idea claiming it's Christianity, usually for the purpose of glorifying one particular young earther who's running a movement or something. There are several of these doing this. And they also hear a lot of the Bible in a bubble kind of evangelical teaching where we just don't connect our Christian message to the world around us. And they don't hear the kind of message you hear, for example, from C.S. Lewis or St. Thomas Aquinas or St. Bonaventure or St. Augustine or all these other medieval guys that we modern Protestants don't read, about how believing in God really is the basis for understanding the world around us. If we were mystics, we wouldn't want to get our hands dirty with the physical world. And if we were animists, we wouldn't want to disturb Mother Nature and have her get angry at us for investigating too much. But we believe in a creator who made the world and made us able to understand some of it and gave us permission to do so. Did that answer anything like your question?
Absolutely. Thank you, Michael, for a useful, insightful talk and ways to evaluate the world that we live in. And I found it very worthwhile. And I hope that